Great, thanks everyone. My name is Laura August, as mentioned, and I'm with the California Environmental Protection Agency, or CalEPA, and the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. And I'd also like to thank all the other researchers at, working with me on this project. So I'm going to be talking about our cumulative impact screening method for assessing environmental justice. And this is a method we have developed for characterizing the cumulative pollution burden that communities in California may experience. That also takes into account other factors such as health outcomes and the socioeconomic status of the population. And then I don't have any relationships to disclose. So a little bit of background talking about some of the basis for concerns for cumulative impacts as well as environmental justice is that the possibility that even with all the regulations that must comply with the law, environmental conditions may still be unhealthy, and that there are specific concerns that minority and lower socioeconomic communities bear high and disproportionate burdens of environmental pollutants. So these are kind of the basis of some environmental justice concerns. And just a little bit of more background in the regulatory world, there's been a shift of emphasis over the last 10 years from looking at things as chemical by chemical individually to a more holistic approach to looking at communities and populations and the different stressors and chemicals that might affect them and interact with each other. For example, in 2008, the National Research Council, in its book Science and Decisions, called for a consideration of non-chemical stressors, vulnerability, and background risk factors in risk assessment. So so in the state, we also have environmental justice and other regulatory mandates that we must comply with. We have an environmental justice law, and we have responsibilities surrounding addressing this. And so one of this is our California EPA Interagency Group on Environmental Justice. And this group put together a environmental justice action plan, which one of the recommendations was for our agency, CalEPA, to develop guidance on how we could address cumulative impacts in environmental justice. And so going off of this, my department, OEHA, the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, was charged with developing some of this guidance. And we started by developing a screening method where we could, which would be a tool that we could use to identify where some of these most impacted areas of the state are, and in order to reduce burdens here. So in 2010, we released, not this picture here, but released a report describing some of the scientific background for concerns for cumulative impacts. And most recently, in the summer of July of this year, we put out a draft report of our California community's environmental health screening tool, which we're calling CalEnviroScreen, which I'm going to talk about the nuts and bolts in a little bit. This was released for public comment, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about the public process and issues of stakeholder involvement. And this represents the next step in CalEPA's Environmental Justice Action Plan. And so just before I get into it, I was going to talk a little bit about some of the stakeholder engagement process of this tool. We had 12 public workshops in the past few months. We had a work group of different stakeholders, as well as we went to communities throughout the state, especially in some of these most impacted areas, and talked to local residents about our tool and if we were capturing their concerns that they were experiencing. We also talked to business communities, local government, tribes, and had a special academic workshop and received many comments, which I'll talk about a little bit later. And I guess it's also important to talk about some of the uses of the tool before talking about the tool itself. And so we initially developed this for our agency itself, although we do recognize that once we put it out there in the world, other people might, you know, do what they want with it. But at CalEPA, we're planning to use it for planning and decision making, you know, allocating our scarce resources, environmental justice grants, and as a method to prioritize where we should put our cleanups and abatements, as well as enforcement could be different options. And at a bare minimum, it gives us a baseline of information about what's going on in the state and gives us a way that we can track improvements over time. And as a caveat, it's not intended to replace risk assessment, but could be used as an additional factor in that. So as I mentioned before, as part of the Environmental Justice Action Plan, there was an interagency working group on environmental justice, which developed this working definition of cumulative impacts, which has kind of been the driver of our development of this tool. And this definition states that cumulative impacts means exposures, public health, and or environmental effects from the combined emissions and discharges within a geographic area, including multiple sources of pollution and many different types of releases, and that it also will take into account sensitive populations and socioeconomic factors when feasible. So based on that definition, we wanted to operationalize it and develop a tool that we could, where we could identify where these areas of the state were. And as the definition states, there was a geographic criteria. So here I have some of our different objectives when developing a tool. The first related to geographic area, which the definition calls for. And so we wanted to pick something that was publicly established and familiar and would be useful to support decisions. So what we ended up choosing was the zip code. And it's the census zip codes, and there's about 1,800 in the state, which we felt was kind of not too small or not too large. Next, we had to develop a way to put all to put information about cumulative impacts together. So we had to come up with a model, a way to aggregate the information that would address the definition as well as the scientific evidence. And it had to give us the ability to compare across our geographies, our zip codes. And then last, and I guess most important, is also is what is the data that you're going to put in this model? So these are our indicator choices, and I'm going to talk about those in more detail, but we wanted to consider multiple media, so we didn't want to just focus on air, even though we have a lot of good air data. We wanted to also consider water and soil, and we had different certain data quality requirements related to it being complete, accurate, and current. So as I mentioned, we wanted to come up with a model based on our definition, and so how we operationalized it is to look at what we're calling the primary components of cumulative impacts. We have on the left side our pollution burden components related to exposures, public health effects, and environmental effects, which I'll define in a minute. And on the right side, we have the population characteristics, which, as described in the definition, are sensitive populations and socioeconomic factors. So in interpreting these, we interpret the pollution burden components of exposure to be possible contact with pollution, public health to be disease or other health conditions influenced by exposure to pollution, things like asthma, for example, and environmental effects to be adverse environmental conditions caused by pollutants, things like Superfund sites or cleanup sites. And then related to population characteristics, we wanted to find data to represent sensitive populations or populations with biological traits that may magnify the effects of pollution, so things like age, children were considered here, and then socioeconomic factors, which are community characteristics that would result in vulnerability to pollutants, things like low income or race ethnicity. And so in this draft report that I mentioned that was released in July of this year, we proposed 19 different indicators or data sets that would meet the criteria for our different components. And I think for sake of time, I won't go through all 19 of them, but we could take a look at some of the exposure ones because I'm going to show an example later. And so here we had different indicators that were related to air pollution, so two criteria air pollutants, ozone concentrations and PM concentrations from our air monitoring data statewide. Also kind of a surrogate for air pollution, we had traffic density, but that also considers other sorts of traffic impacts from traffic as well. We had pesticide use data as a surrogate for pesticide exposures, and we also had toxic releases from facilities. As Natalie mentioned, that's the US EPA TRI database, toxic release inventory. And then we're also working on, in blue at the bottom, a drinking water quality data set. So we don't have that yet, but we're working on that. We feel that one's important. And then I think I'll just go through public health and then we'll skip along. So public health, these were, as we defined, health conditions that may be influenced by exposure to pollutants. So here we identified low birth weight and asthma emergency room visits. We would have liked to have asthma incidents, but because data the data is not available that way, we used emergency room or emergency department visits. And then we have heart disease mortality and cancer mortality, which we're still working on. So getting back to the model and the different how the data is put together, I have an example here of one of the exposure indicators. This is one of the air pollutants, particulate matter from air monitoring data. And the map shows the different, all the zip codes in the state. There's about 1,800. And how the model works is that each geographic unit, so each zip code in the state, has its underlying data. So each zip code is associated with a PM concentration. And what we did is we assigned a percentile value based on where each zip code fell within the statewide distribution. So in this example here, the darkest blue represents things that were above the 90th percentile. And so that's how we assigned a score to the individual indicators. And so in the draft report, we present this for all of the 19 indicators. And so to finally bring it all together, to combine all of the different indicators, we created a model that took the different components. The ones in the middle are the ones related to the pollution burden, which we sum together and are multiplied by the population characteristics. So it's kind of a hazard times vulnerability model. And there were assigned different range of scores, which I don't need to get into, but for example, exposures, we assign the highest weight of a 1 to 10. Those are summed together with the other pollution burden indicator components and multiplied by the population characteristics. So each zip code in the end would receive a score of a cumulative impact score of 6 to 120, where 120 would be the places that we're experiencing the most burden from pollution and all of these other factors. And just to mention in this report, we didn't provide the final overall score yet since we are receiving comments right now and we're planning on making refinements. So when I talk about next steps, we'll have a timeline for when you could see that. And so how it all comes together, this is an example showing the Los Angeles area for the different 5 exposure indicators. So across the top from left to right, we have the ozone and PM, pesticides, the toxic release one. It's kind of a mess there because we used a buffer, a 1 kilometer buffer around all of the facilities. So LA has a lot of them, so it kind of looks very red. And then traffic density. So those percentiles for each, all of the zip codes get averaged together, and we assign an overall exposure score to each zip code. So, for example, you see across the top, those get all averaged together, and then when we zoom into Los Angeles at the bottom, the darker areas represent the hot places with highest exposures. And this is also an example of some of the posters we presented in our community workshops that we had throughout the year. So when we went to LA, we presented this and talked with community members about concerns if this was representative of the things that they were most concerned about and any refinements they had. Kind of taking back to Natalie's talk about looking at transportation corridors, in our current model, we don't have any diesel we don't have ports in there. And as you might see, you probably can't see, but the Long Beach area isn't coming up as high, and maybe if we do add that kind of port, addition of ports, thinking about diesel PM, maybe that might bring that up a little higher. And so now, where are we now? After we had all of these workshops and showed our proposed model, we've received many comments, over more than 1,000, and these are some examples of some of the comments we received. Some are related to the model, that maybe the weighting should be done differently, or we should provide additional justification. And there are also comments that instead of multiplying, maybe we should consider adding. And I was going to talk just a little bit about those and a preliminary sensitivity analysis that we conducted. And then people also were interested in additional sources of data, including diesel emissions, including things like the ports and rail yard, linguistic isolation, and drinking water quality. And then if you can remember far back to the model, We had the public health component, which we were saying were diseases or other health conditions that are influenced by pollution, exposure to pollutants. There was a lot of feedback that perhaps these indicators might be better as indicators of vulnerability and not necessarily of pollution exposure, so that we should consider maybe moving those to the vulnerability side of the model, which is something that we're actively thinking about and considering. And so so a little preliminary of our sensitivity analysis, and in no way is this finished, but we thought we would put some stuff together for this presentation, is we looked at some of the correlations between the indicators. And the correlations might help us understand a little bit for the potential of double counting, which is a concern. For example, maybe two of your air pollution indicators might really be capturing the same thing, so it might not be a good idea to include both of them. But we did see in this initial correlation that the indicators of particulate matter and ozone were actually not very well correlated. It was a 0.32, which kind of thought made us think that maybe it's a good thing that we have both of them there because their statewide distribution is different and they're not occurring in the same place. We did see some evidence of correlations. Slightly, we had two of our indicators of the environmental effects, which are environmental conditions or environmental degradation. We had an indicator of cleanup sites, which are things like Superfund sites or other contaminated soil, and an indicator of groundwater threats, which are things like leaking underground storage tanks and contaminated groundwater. And those were slightly correlated, which we think makes sense because a lot of times those occur in similar places, but we thought that they were both important. And then, as expected, for our age indicators, we had children and elderly, and these were actually negatively correlated, which you would expect that places with a lot of elderly don't have a lot of children. And so we addressed that by creating kind of a combined measure that factored in their kind of opposite effect. And then related to some of the socioeconomic factor variables, these were all pretty well correlated. For example, the income and poverty, increasing income and increasing poverty were negatively correlated as expected, pretty high, 0.89. And this is kind of leading us to think that maybe we should get rid of one of them and leaning towards not including income and just including poverty. And then the last bit of our preliminary sensitivity analysis is looking at the model itself, because we did get comments about just understanding the model and do changes in the model affect the communities you're identifying as coming out as the most impacted. And so on the top left, we have our proposed model as it is right now with the different weights and the multiplication. And we looked at approximately that gray area represents about the top 5% of the zip code, so about out of the 1,800, up close to 100 zip codes. And we looked at three different models where things were left all equal, we didn't have weights, and ones where we added instead of multiplied. So those are those there. And when we looked at where those same communities in the proposed model went in the different types of model, most of the time, or 80% of the time, they also were in the top 5%. And then the rest of them were at least in the top 15%. So, you know, by no means is this a justification that we should keep our model, but it's kind of leading us in the direction of thinking about how we might address how changes in model might affect the outcome. And so I think that takes me to the end and our next step. So as I mentioned, we received a lot of comments, and we're taking them into serious consideration and planning on making changes and revising the model, conducting additional sensitivity analysis, and hoping to release this final tool, another draft, and then a final, or at least the first beta version, early next year, hoping that we can have a web-based tool where people can go online and type in their address or zip code and be able to see what are all the different different data going on, or what does it look like in their community. So yeah, that's it. And thank you again to all of everyone working on this with me. So thanks. Thank you.